Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. On Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, drop us all of your voicemails, all of your text messages. Matt, March Madness has started. By the time you're listening to the show, Bulls Nation, these are probably entrenched by every single game going on right now. I filled out my brackets, and I'll just say this right now. I don't know if I'm comfortable with all the teams, all the games that I picked, but if I can survive this first weekend with having the majority of my Sweet 16 teams still alive, that's an accomplishment. If I can get out of this first weekend with all of my Final Four teams still intact, I think that's a win. Matt, I don't know about you, but March Madness is definitely one of my favorite weekends in all of sports. I know that if you're not a huge college basketball fan, this might not be the biggest weekend for you, but definitely for me, every single year, this is one of my favorite weekends. But how you doing? Are you recovered from that Bulls game last night? And what a game that was.
What's up, Jordan? No, I'm not recovered. I feel like every late season win the Bulls get, I need to, you know, take a very aggressive shower where I essentially scrubs several layers of skin off myself. That was so stupid. Another stupid win. And I guess you could talk about the fact that Markkanen finally had a bounce back game, which we were desperately needing. But yeah, I'm so happy the tourney's finally here, because it'll be nice to have a distraction from this home stretch of pointless Bulls wins.
Yeah, it's too bad that the Chicago related teams aren't in the tournament this year. You know, I guess you do have Bradley. Bradley's a good story, although the overshadowing with the journal.
They're going to get trounced by the Spartans today.
Yeah, the tournament run's going to be short for the Bradley Braves, but Illinois's not in it. Northwestern's not in it. The story from last year with Loyola making their run.
Sister Jean!
Yeah, that story was really good.
Happened?
And we're not getting...
Sister Jean didn't pray hard enough, I guess.
We're not getting a story like that again. And their tournament run
Never
in the NIT
Jesus.
Didn't last very long either. So, it's unfortunate, but... I think for a lot of people, the NCAA tournament is something that we can lean on now, especially with the Bulls not going to the playoffs, not being very good, and baseball kind of kicking off as well. Again, Matt, it's like maybe I cursed it. Maybe that's something that you and I have done on this show, talking about the Cavaliers and saying, nah, they're not going to win games. And then it's like... go on a two-game winning streak here, beat the Pistons, and then they beat the Bucks last night.
Right. No Giannis, so that certainly helped, but...
Right, but then even we saw just, a week and a half ago when the Bulls played the Bucks, that Bucks team is still pretty good without Giannis. Obviously, Giannis helps, but Bucks team is still a pretty damn good team without him. It still just shocks me that the Cavaliers fans must be infuriated themselves watching that team win games at the end of this season.
Well, hey, they have no reason to worry, because apparently for every game the Cavs win, the Bulls are going to follow it with a win of their own 5 minutes later.
They did give themselves every opportunity not to win this game. It just goes to show you how bad that Wizards team is, right?
Oh my gosh, that Wizards team is so bad. You know, obviously, Beal has always been a star in his own right, always been kind of second fiddle to John Wall, but with Wall's injury, he's really stepped to the forefront. He had 27 points to lead their starting unit last night. Jabari, 11 of 18 off the bench for 28 points. But outside of that, I mean, you know, Satoransky doing his usual thing, chipping in with 16 and 7. But that is not, I mean, that Wizards team is hopeless. They are bad. And the Bulls, like you said, like it's not like the Bulls were trying really hard to win that game as far as who was getting minutes. They decided to sit Zach LaVine for precautionary reasons. They sat Otto Porter again. And you know, if Markkanen doesn't have a bounce back game, maybe we are talking about a loss and not a win.
Yeah, and I wonder if anything had to do with Zach LaVine being all of a sudden a scratch, because a few hours before this game, it was like, okay, Zach LaVine's probable to play in this one, and then you see the Cavs get out to an early lead against the Bucks, and then Giannis isn't playing in that game, and then they're like, eh. Just in case the Cavs end up winning that game and there's a chance that maybe we could catch them and not make the same mistake twice in a week, fate ends up having a weird way of playing things out and the Bulls end up pulling off an overtime win against the Wizards. So, like I've said before, though, I can't really say anything because I've backed the idea of building wins at the end of this season. So I will say this about last night's win compared to the Suns' win. At least Lauri Markkanen last night had, like you said, a bounce back game in comparison to what we saw against the Suns. Lauri Markkanen with 32 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, and only 1 turnover and 1 block on 12 of 21 shooting, 5 for 8 from the 3-point line. So that was really good to see. I liked that the shot distribution and where the offense was coming from was from Markkanen and from Chris Dunn, as opposed to everything coming from Robin Lopez, and Robin Lopez was large in part the reason why you were winning a game, which was what we saw on Monday with that Suns game. So I'm okay with that if it's coming from Markkanen and Dunn, or Markkanen and LaVine, or Markkanen and Porter, as opposed to Robin Lopez.
Well, yeah, and speaking of Dunn, I mean, what did you think about his game? We kind of had a debate about it on Outsiders last night. You know, are you encouraged by the fact that he had a 26 and 13 game, or are you discouraged because it took him 24 shots to get to 26 points? I feel like I kind of fall towards the latter of those two.
Yeah, it is a bit strange. I mean,
not often you see Chris Dunn take 24 shots.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those glass half empty, glass half full kind of things, right? It's like the way you look at this entire season, or the way you look at it. Was nice to see him get 13 assists last night. I think he had eight of those assists in the first half. The one thing that was a bit strange in this game, and this is caused by the defense a lot, was the offense was still seemingly very staggered, very slow, and I think that was just because the Bulls, for the majority of this game, couldn't stop anything on defense. Shaq Harrison in the bench had 8 of the Bulls' 10 steals, so a lot of the Bulls' transition buckets, I felt, were coming on those types of steals and easy buckets there, but other than that, the Bulls did not have any other types of transition opportunities, and Markkanen wasn't getting out like he was in February, you know, because the Bulls weren't getting stops there. So, I don't know. The offense just, it didn't look the same like we were seeing it in February. So, it was weird. But for Chris Dunn, this was good. 26 points, 13 assists, 6 rebounds, and only 2 turnovers, and he had 2 steals. The foul trouble, though, was another problem. This has been a problem for Chris Dunn all year.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I feel about Dunn having a game like this, where everybody looks at the box score and thinks, oh, wow, he actually had a pretty good game. But to me, it's still the fact that he's just not been as defensively elite as we have come to expect him to be, or at least the way that we felt he was going to show his strengths at the NBA level. Not necessarily the most versatile scorer, not a dominant scorer, but he's going to play above average defense. And between the silly fouls, the foul trouble, and getting cooked by a lot of the better young guards in this league this season, as we've talked about over the course of their schedule, that to me is the part about Dunn that's just been really disappointing. because the thing that we wanted to come into the season to see with Dunn, you know, we hoped to see him expand his offensive game a little bit, yes, but you wanted to see him develop a greater amount of the zero chemistry he seemed to have with LaVine last season and allow LaVine to be more of the primary scorer in your backcourt and have Dunn make up for some of LaVine's defensive shortcomings. That's kind of how, ideally, you would have seen this season work out as far as Dunn and LaVine playing together. But last night was another example of the ongoing trend of Dunn plays better when Zach LaVine sits. And those numbers are not a huge sample size, but they're not a small sample size. And it was another piece of evidence in the Dunn and LaVine have zero chemistry situation. And that the part about defense that we were just talking about, we haven't seen enough of that to show that Chris Dunn could be as elite of a defensive point guard to mask Zach LaVine. And between that and very little chemistry on the offensive end, I think that like that is collectively what has gotten us to this point, which is that it doesn't matter if Dunn had a decent game last night, even if it took him 24 shots, but 13 assists and kept the turnovers to a minimum, decent game. But it doesn't matter, because if you are keeping one and only one of Zach LaVine and Dunn because their chemistry is so bad, who do you keep? You keep Zach LaVine, who is a dominant scorer on what looks to be a pretty team-friendly contract at this point.
Yeah, I'd be curious, and I'm going to have to go back and do the research on it, but I would like to go back and look last season. If Chris Dunn was getting in this much foul trouble last year, you know, especially during this stretch, you know, because it seems like he's getting in a ton of foul trouble, especially early on in games. Have you noticed that? Like, where he's picking up two or three fouls.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And he's only in the game for 10 or 12, like, less than 10 minutes.
Maybe he felt like he just needed to pick up the mantle from Wendell once he went down for the year.
Oh, poor Wendell,
all right, so,
man.
So who's getting two fouls in the first 90 seconds? No one? All right, I guess I'll do it.
And you know what? I shouldn't laugh at that either, because maybe that's something we should go look at that more in depth. Because when we were talking about that with Wendell Carter, Wendell was picking up those fouls, but they were because the Bulls were playing lazy defense. They were just letting guys get blown past them, and Carter was more so picking up those fouls. All right, I'm going to go save this team from a bucket, and it's either me picking up this foul or this team's just going to throw down a slam, or I got to go chase this dude down because nobody else is, and I got to pick up the foul for the team. And I think that's more so Carter learning to, yo, don't pick up the foul and earn yourself 8 minutes on the bench by picking up your third foul as opposed to just give them the bucket. But that's an interesting point. I think we should go back and look at that. How many of those are Chris Dunn just picking up really bad fouls, or is Chris Dunn picking up fouls because he's having to make up for other defensive mistakes? I think I'm going with the former on that. Maybe Chris Dunn's just picking up really bad fouls.
Yeah, no, he does. He makes really dumb fouls, which is contrary to what we were led to believe about Chris Dunn, which is that he is not only an elite, athletic, long defender at the point guard spot, but a smart one. And to me, there's been very little evidence of that. Whereas, meanwhile, we've seen Shaq Harrison play some of the best defensive minutes in the NBA this season.
Man, I've been on the Shaq Harrison train.
Like, he showed up and had a really good game last night. He actually chipped in on the offensive end, too, which you don't see too often because he can't shoot. But he finished 18 points on 7 to 13, 6 boards, 4 steals, and there was this awesome collection of Shaq Harrison stats from Mark Stroutman last night. Only Nerlens Noel leads Shaq Harrison among all NBA players in deflections per 36 minutes. Shaq Harrison has 3.9, Noel has 5.1. He's first, Shaq Harrison, in the NBA in steals per 36 minutes at 2.4, and his average defensive speed of 4.49 miles per hour leads the NBA. So for all the talk about Chris Dunn being an elite defensive guard, and I know it's funny that they technically like list him as like a small forward in their lineups because the Bulls are going so small these days, but Shaq is a guard. He is showing us what it actually means to be an aggressive, smart give it everything you got defensive guard in this league. And he's making Chris Dunn look silly in comparison.
Yeah, I think Shaq Harrison's only Shaq Harrison's only averaging, I think, like 18 minutes a night, which, I mean, the Bulls have an uncanny way this season to develop backup point guards, which is kind of crazy. Now we've developed three pretty decent backup point guards in Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, and what looks to be maybe Chris Dunn in a backup point guard role. Which is going to put the Bulls in a really weird position this offseason because you can't keep three backup point guards. So, I don't know. Shaq Harrison's, like I said, like about a month ago, I think he's definitely going to be on an NBA team. I don't know if it's going to be with the Bulls.
He will.
And that's what he's pressing the Bulls now with an even tougher decision, because do you let a guard that is showing you every single night can play really good defense? And it's hard to find point guards that can play scrappy, in your face, can get the amount of steals and in transition points Shaq Harrison's getting you on a nightly basis the way he has all season long. It's hard to deny, like the stats you had just read off. And that's been like that since he joined the Bulls. It's hard to deny. And like you said, the only thing that worries me about him is the ability to score. But in a role that you're only playing 15 to 18 to maybe 20 minutes a night, it's not all that bad. But I don't. But then you look at the other two guys that the Bulls have. Chris Dunn's under contract. I know the Bulls really like Ryan Arcidiacono. So where does that leave Shaq Harrison? Don't really know. But he had certainly a great night last night. 18 points, 6 rebounds, 4 steals, and only 1 turnover. He's a plus 14 in the plus minus. So. Shout out to Shaq Harrison. He played 39 minutes last night, too. So let's talk about a couple other things in this game before we get to some prospect talk, because we promised our listeners we would do that with the on the cusp of March Madness today. And while you're listening to this, maybe watching some games going on, some very weird things happened in this game, Matt. Some very, very, very strange things happened in this game. But before we get to that, one other thing about Chris Dunn, really quick. He was 3-for-7 from 3 last night, which increasingly, over the last maybe 5 to 10 games, Chris Dunn has been knocking down threes at a better rate than I think we've ever seen him do this before. So that's really good to see. Well, he's not getting to the basket and drawing fouls like I wanted to see him do this year. He's at least starting to knock down threes at a better clip, which is very unexpected, and I didn't think he was going to be able to do that and start to develop that part of his game. Just wanted to make mention to you and to our listeners that in the month of March, Chris Dunn's averaging 3.2 three-point attempts per game. He's shooting 40% from three.
It's a significant uptick as opposed to in the month of February, he was only shooting 2.3, so almost 1 3 fewer per game and hitting 27.8%. So, and it's been kind of up and down. In January, he shot 40% on just under 2 attempts per game. So, it's been a weird roller coaster for Dunn's three-point shot this season, and that was something that we hoped we would see improve as far as the offensive elements to his game to help the Bulls with their floor spacing. But at least the most recent trend is upward in attempts and makes, because we saw him be very hesitant to shoot those threes for better stretches of the season, and You can't necessarily knock him for being hesitant to shoot them because he's never been a very good three-point shooter. But it's like he's no longer hesitating when he sees an open shot. Pardon me. There were plenty of times earlier this season when Dunn had a wide-open look and he would either pass it off or hesitate and then have not a great form and not a great flow to his release on the three ball. These days, if he sees an open look, and he's seeing a lot of them, and I think that's now a combined reason for the fact that he's started to take more and make more, is that as far as the other team's scouting report, everybody's saying, all these coaches are telling their players, like, leave Chris Dunn wide open. Leave Chris Dunn, like, let Chris Dunn shoot threes. And he actually, to his credit, has started to make other teams pay for that because he's taken a few more and he's making them. So for all the faults and for all the ways we've been disappointed in Chris Dunn this season, we'll see if he continues to shoot that three ball well over the final 10 games of the season. But it's nice to see that at least. Like, it doesn't change my mind entirely about how I feel about Chris Dunn and my disappointment in his season and the fact that he is definitely not this team's starting point guard of the future. It doesn't change my mind about that. But, I mean, you know, take it as a small positive in a world of lots of disappointments.
At the very least, you know, when he plays well, it only opens up some options for the Bulls this summer. You know, whether that's figuring out what he can be as part of this team, it only opens up options if the Bulls want to move on. Also, too, he gave us a Hall of Fame soundbite last night. I got to thank Antonio Blakeney for this and Zach LaVine. That soundbite he gave us with Kelly Kroll at the end of the game was...
Oh, it was flawless.
Hilarious.
Wait, let me grab one.
No, two.
Oh, that will be used for a very long time on Locked On Bulls. So thank you to Zach LaVine, Antonio Blakeney, Chris Dunn, Kelly Kroll for that.
Somebody on Twitter that was like, you know, when it's late at night and your boy's at the club trying to order another round of tequila shots.
Oh, man. That's an all-timer, man. And let's talk about Jim Boylan for a second.
Oh, when he yelled at Jeff Green?
Matt, this is very odd. I had never seen this before. I was never aware of this ever happening. But I guess Vinny Del Negro did this back with the Bulls against the Knicks one time, and shout out to Stefan Noe for finding this clip. I don't remember this. I'm not a fan of this move at all. I think this is lame. And to me, you know, the Bulls are 30th in defensive rating in the third quarter in March. And at halftime, this is your defensive adjustment, is to yell at guys that are wide open at the three-point line, man? This is your defensive adjustment?
They'll never see it coming. They'll never see it coming, Jordan. It's a great strategy. We were just talking on, what, yesterday's episode about Jim Boylan ticking off not one but two opponents' head coaches on a three-game road trip for his various antics. And I'm sorry, this is yet another example of Jim Boylan just doing something that... Look, I think some of it is this dude is so competitive that... He's too competitive for his own good, and he really wants all of the spirit and the grit and the toughness and the effort, and I'm sure it's killing him that the Bulls are so bad defensively in this recent stretch. But guess what? Some of that's on you. Yes, this team is not blessed with a lot of defensive talent on the roster, and there's only so much Boylan can coach, but they've defensively gotten worse as the season has progressed. So some of that, yeah, you're missing Wendell. Obviously, that is a factor there that you can't ignore. But even still, and Boylan used the excuse earlier after trading away Holiday, right, that he was like, well, that's like one of our best defensive players. I'm sorry, did you watch Justin Holiday play defense this season? He was terrible. So, like, some of the defensive failure is on Jim Boylan. He was the one who was supposed to be the defensive guru handling that side of the team's coaching when Fred Hoiberg was still his head coach. And to see this kind of stuff, Bush League amateur bullcrap. What other NBA coach is doing that, huh? Okay, like there was that one time where Jason Kidd told one of his players to knock into him so he could spill his water because he didn't have a timeout to use in a moment when he really needed it. But that's what this made me think of. How classless can you be? Yes, when you're in the heat of battle as a player on the court, you see people do that kind of stuff. Players shouting at people to try and distract them when they're going up for a shot. But for a coach to do it from the sidelines, give me a break, Jim Boylan. You look like a fool.
I leave it to the players, man. That's where I'm at. Leave it to the players to do it on the floor. It's been a bad week for Boylan. This has been a really bad week in terms of petty moves.
We were starting to want to give Boylan credit for some of the ways that the team had turned around and for maybe realizing that his players are starting to respond to his tactics and his coaching methods and Zach LaVine finally coming around and building a sense of trust and another layer of a relationship with Boylan and all that kind of stuff. And then in the span of a week, he he embarrasses himself three different times by doing stuff that seems very amateurish. And that's kind of what we all thought from the get-go. The first reaction, the knee-jerk reaction was, Jim Boylan is an amateur who's in over his head, right? That's kind of what we all thought when we saw him. And it was more to do with the X's and O's strategy of what he was doing and the ridiculous, you know, three-hour practices. And, oh, we're going to make our guys do wind sprints and push-ups, and we're going to practice in the jam-packed week of like four games and five nights and all that kind of stuff. And it was that stuff that made us say, what, like, he does he think he's coaching some high school kids? What is this? And then this week we get more of that kind of stuff that just makes him look like an amateur, and not just an amateur, but classless. As you said, Jordan, where else across the NBA are you seeing head coaches yell at opposing players to try and mess up their shots? Tell me who else in the league is caught doing that.
I can't tell you. I would have liked to hear somebody ask him about that, but nobody did. It would have been interesting to hear a response from him and why. And maybe this, you know, maybe I don't want to blow it out of proportion either because nobody asked him about it, and maybe, or hear a player be asked about it. And obviously other things happened throughout this game, and we'll get to those in a second, that kind of oversaw this, but that's my thing. I go back to it is like the Bulls have the worst defensive rating in the third quarters, and third quarters have been a huge problem for the Bulls all season. And you watched in that third quarter, the Wizards were taking wide open threes. Wide open threes. And the only reason that the Wizards shouldn't have been blowing the Bulls out in that third quarter is they were missing those wide open threes. And this was your defensive adjustments. Matt, the other thing too that happened in this game that I think caused a huge stir was the play that happened between Bobby Portis and Lauri Markkanen at the end of the game.
Yeah. Speaking of classless,
what did you think about that?
I hated it. A lot of people on Twitter I saw defending Bobby, saying it didn't look intentional. I say BS. That looked intentional. And, you know, you and I have a brief personal relationship history with Bobby. He certainly seems like a well-intentioned guy, a very nice guy. I think he was misunderstood. We defended him, to a certain extent for the Bobby and Nico incident of 2017, whereas a lot of people are just so quick to make jokes about that kind of stuff. But there is a reason for the Crazy Eyes nickname, and I think he is a guy with a short fuse of sorts. And Bobby definitely felt burned when he got traded. And I don't know if there was ever any personal vendetta between Bobby and Lowry. If so, we never really heard about it. But we do know that Bobby and Monika had contention because they were fighting for minutes at the same spot. And the same is true for Bobby and Markkanen. Markkanen showed up as the rookie darling after all the hard work that Bobby had put in again, after Nico got traded, Bobby had an opportunity for himself again. And here, you know, here comes Lauri Markkanen. Everybody falls in love with him his rookie year. Bulls fans are so jacked up to see Markkanen turn into a star in year two. And he takes some of that spotlight away from Bobby Portis. And for all the stuff Bobby said about, I want to be sixth man of the year, I'm ready to come off the bench and play my role, there's probably a good chance that some of that burned him up. That he was, you know, jealous of Lauri Markkanen. And, you know, and that's just me pontificating because we never heard anything specific about any friction in the relationship between those two guys. But we do know at the very least that Bobby was burned by the trade, and he is a very intense person. But to people saying that that didn't look intentional, I say, go back and watch the replay. He clearly, Markkanen has the ball stretched out way in front of him. Bobby's not making a play on the ball at all. Swipes down on Markkanen's face, not once, but then follows through with his other hand coming across his body to hit him in the face again. I like Bobby, and I've defended him about some stuff in the past, but that, to me, much like Jim Boylan's behavior last night, Bobby Portis was classless. And what bothered me more is that he seemed very unrepentant when asked about it after the game.
Hey, Bobby, what happened on that flagrant foul? Mm-hmm. Looked like you were trying to prevent the layup, wasn't it?
Nah. An accident or what? You know, I just went for the ball. I can't control, you know, what happens after I go for the ball, but it's for a dirty play at all. It just happened to happen. I knew I would get a flagrant. You know, if I feel like if somebody else would have did it and they want to go there and patted me on the back and I was the one in that position, then I wouldn't get a flagrant foul. Then I would get a flagrant call if I was Lowry, but it is what it is.
Not only did he just have a dead stare in his eye when Markkanen clearly was a little upset and ticked off about it. No apology on the court, no butt tap, no fist bump, no nothing. And then essentially didn't apologize afterwards. And it definitely looked intentional to me.
Then you hear from Markkanen after the game too, and he doesn't want to start anything either. And good for Markkanen on the way that he responded to reporters asking about Bobby Portis and the interaction that those two had. And then I don't remember who asked it, but he followed up too and said, you know, him and Jabari were going back and forth about it. Not about this, but just going back and forth throughout the game.
Bobby Portis still your friend?
Yeah. Got nothing against him. I actually haven't seen the play yet, but I don't believe he was intentional. I don't think he's like that. And the thing about Bobby is he just always plays so hard, and so stuff happens. So I don't believe that was anything intentional.
Where'd you get it the worst? Nose, mouth?
I don't know. Everything.
What was going on with you and Jabari out there? It seemed like he was trying to go at you.
No, nothing. He just... Jabari played hard again, and so we just were competing. So that's pretty much it. We didn't talk anything.
It seemed like there was some tension between all three of these guys throughout the game, and you know that just could be basketball. But just going back to this play in general, yeah, man, the first hit could have been unintentional, but that second one, man, was bad. Like, came down hard on Markkanen's face. There's no excuse for it. No excuse for it at all.
I mean, it was upgraded to a flagrant one after the refs looked at it. So, there's the fine that'll be attached to that. I don't know if there will be any discipline beyond that. I would say it's unlikely. But it was, in my opinion, people argue a lot these days about how soft the NBA is compared. I saw somebody put up a 80s and 90s basketball highlight reel of physical play and fights and stuff on Twitter yesterday. And people talk, and retired players talk about how soft today's league is. And there is certainly truth to that. It is nowhere near the physical sport that it was, 20, 30 years ago. But still, to me, the refs got it right, upgrading that to a flagrant one, because it looked so blatantly intentional as not a play on the ball, not an effort to stop the ball from going in the hoop, but just the intention of, I'm going to hit this guy in the face, and I'm going to hit this guy in the face twice. There's no other way to explain what Bobby did. And people who, I saw a few people saying, yeah, it seemed unintentional to me, just kind of coming down after mistiming his jump to contest the shot. Nah. Bobby knew where that left forearm was going, and he clearly knew where his right hand was going when he followed through coming down. It was disgusting to me. It really disappointed me. Because, as I said, We've come to Bobby's defense when people crack jokes about him after the Nico incident, but he clearly has a dark side. And I think a lot of it is just rooted in his competitive nature and how competitive he is.
It just sucks. It's a bad situation. And like you said, we've come to bat against for Bobby a bunch of different times, for people that crack jokes at him and have... It blew the Nico and Bobby thing out of proportion, and we felt like that people didn't know both sides. But then you see that happen, and it sucks when that happens. And then it's like, okay, we have no defense for that because it's right there. So, yeah. Let's move on, though. beyond the Jim Boylan stuff that happened in the third quarter and, you know, this Bobby's stuff that happened at the end, that final play go into overtime. I don't understand that play, that drop at the end.
It was the same as the LaVine inbounds play that got them the win against the Sixers a couple weeks ago. The intention was
right,
for
but why are you passing it into Robin Lopez?
Right. Well, you know, they obviously, because if the initial plan of getting the ball back to Markkanen, the inbounder, doesn't work, then you just have Robin Lopez with the ball at the top of the arc with 2 seconds left, which is not going to go well for you. Yeah, I mean, it was a completely failed inbounds play. It's pretty simple.
Having Markkanen inbound that ball there eliminated your best shooter on the floor, your best scorer on the floor. So
essentially, your only shooter on the floor at that point.
All right, let's get to the March Madness stuff now. Let's get to some prospects to talk about here as we kind of wrap up. So with the tournament starting, I figure we talk about some of the first rounders that are going to be in action not only today but this weekend, and also talk about maybe some second rounders with the Bulls having the Memphis pick as well. So Matt, I've got five guys that I'm going to keep a close eye on outside of Zion Williamson, the obvious one we've talked about a lot extensively. Some other guys though that we maybe haven't talked about at all. So I asked you two to come up with a list of a few guys just in the first round and also in the second round where the Bulls are likely going to pick. So I'm interested to hear kind of us go back and forth and talk about a few different prospects. So let's start in the first round. The first guy that I got on my list that I think would be interesting, and this is not necessarily going to be at the fourth pick, but guys that I've seen either listed at the Bulls position or guys that I just like in general that I think would be good fits for the Bulls no matter where they're picking. The first guy that I think Bulls fans should be watching is DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. I mentioned him a couple times over the last month or two. He's 6'8", 230, 7'2 wingspan. I've been going in depth. Shout out to The Athletic again. I know I've been shouting out them a lot, but they do a phenomenal job. And Sam Vecenie, who did their draft board, talked to 60 assistant coaches across college basketball, and then reading a bunch of other mock drafts, reading some of the opinions of these assistant coaches and how and where that they see these prospects fitting, DeAndre Hunter is interesting because thinking about what the Bulls need, and defense is one of them. If the Bulls fall out of the top three and they're looking at wing players, if they even fall back to as far back as maybe 6 or 7, I think DeAndre Hunter might be a guy I'm super interested in.
Certainly somebody I'm looking for. He's playing, they play tomorrow, right? Tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, one of those True TV games. The 1 week a year where we know what the hell True TV is.
It's True TV.
yeah, I mean, I really like him, man. It's like he's got good size at his position. Certainly has the defend multiple positions trait for the NBA, making that jump to the next level. Really solid perimeter defender, maybe the best perimeter defender in this pretty weak draft class, and a guy who hit 45% of his threes this year. I mean, the dude is the definition of a 3-and-D wing, and I know right now that's not necessarily a position of need for the Bulls if you're talking about Otto Porter coming into the fold and hopefully developing Chandler Hutchison into that kind of player. But even still, this guy is climbing up a lot of draft boards for a reason. It's because he looks like maybe the best 3-and-D guy in this draft class.
And the things that I was looking at too and just reading from assistant coaches, not only in the NBA but also in college basketball, were you nailed it right on the top of the head, is defense had been something that is common theme with him. Defensive made star, can make an impact right away on teams that don't need him to play in a position that need him high volume of minutes right away. And that seems like something that makes sense for the Bulls. Like, you've got Otto Porter here, so if you're going to take a guy that is either going to play the 3 or the 4, and the Bulls end up falling from 4 to 6 or 7, and they're looking at DeAndre Hunter there, or maybe the Bulls are at three or four and toss around the idea of trading down and you end up with two picks, something like that, just in theory. DeAndre Hunter makes sense. Coming off the bench, can play lockdown defense, can be a guy that can catch and shoot threes at a pretty decent clip. The only weakness that I was reading about his game and watching some film is he's a better catch and shoot three than he is off the dribble. People were saying, though, that he that might be a talent that he can learn as his game grows in the NBA. His ceiling rises if he can start to knock down those threes off the dribble. Something that I also really liked about him is that he's one of those locker room guys. Talked about it at Virginia, too. He's a guy that's going to go in there and learn from leaders and also be one of those leaders. Extremely athletic, too, and also super clutch for Virginia. When they need a bucket late, he's the guy that they go to and will knock it down at a high clip. So I like this dude, and I think if you miss out on Ja Morant, you miss out on Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett's off the board, and you're looking around at a selection of wings, he seems like a very ballsy type of player. So I wouldn't, I would keep my eye on DeAndre Hunter. So Matt, who of the first round has kind of piqued your interest and guys that we haven't really talked
about? It's two of them from a big program who are just kind of skating under the radar right now, and it's Kentucky. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, is it Zion and Duke's turning to win? Is UNC going to make it? Can Sparty make a run? Tennessee, another favorite for everybody. A lot of people are really high on Zaga as another one of the number ones. Kentucky as a two is just kind of chilling. Like, there really aren't any big Kentucky storylines. But they've got two really interesting forwards on this team this year. Keldon Johnson, who's projected to go like back end of the top 10 right now, who's kind of like a combo forward. And then PJ Washington is a guy who not a whole lot of people give attention to, even though he might be actually like their most efficient and most talented player this season, averaging nearly 15 points, 7.5 boards, shooting 51% from the field. He's a pretty good shot blocker. He's got a 7'3 wingspan. And right now he's projected to go like early to mid second round. So if you're talking about guys to keep an eye on that maybe the Bulls would be looking for in the second round when they do have a pick coming in this 2019 draft, watch PJ Washington play. It's Kentucky Abilene Christian tonight, 6:10. That's a CBS game at 6:10 p.m. Central Time. I like this PJ Washington kid. And when you think about Bobby and Jabari leaving, Markkanen and Wendell being that front court of the future, Robin Lopez probably going away, Felicio, people talking about him having a decent stretch of games, shut up, you sound ridiculous. He's still a joke of an NBA player in that he is not one. The Bulls actually need to address some depth at like a backup power forward, backup center situation. So if they can't afford to keep Robin Lopez, you might look for them to take a flyer on a big with that second pick, assuming they go with one of the several high-end wings and or a point guard with that first pick. PJ Washington is a guy that I'm going to be watching carefully today.
Yeah, I've seen him up and down a bunch of different boards. You know, it depends on where you're looking at. You know, The Athletic has him right now projected at 19 going to the Utah Jazz, but I've seen him as low as early second round. I've seen him as high as 15 on some boards. I've seen him as high as maybe back end of the lottery. So looking at the second round too, talking about a couple of guys that might slide up or down, Admiral Schofield, who is a Illinois native from Zion, Illinois, he's a dude I think we should definitely keep our eye on. If you didn't watch any of the conference tournaments last week, you guys missed out. Tennessee has been on a roll, and it's a team that I think can make a Final Four run.
I've got Tennessee in my Final Four.
Me too. I have them actually going to my national championship game. I think they're a team that I think they could potentially have upsets. I think they're good enough, and they've been on a roll between Admiral Schofield, if he can continue to shoot well, and between him and Grant Williams, it's all going to depend on their three-point shooting and ability to guard on the perimeter. But, Admiral Schofield, a lot of mixed reviews on him. But the good thing for the Bulls with that second round pick is, depending on what they do with their first round pick, if they do end up lucky enough to get a guy like Ja Morant, they can end up doing this thing where they either draft a big or they draft a combo wing position. I think Admiral Schofield, the one knock on him is, can he continue to shoot the three, and can that translate to the NBA, and can he guard the perimeter the way he's able to do it in college basketball? Is he quick enough? Can he still do that? Dude is massive, and he's athletic as hell, but is he quick enough to guard, and can he continue to shoot well from the perimeter? I like him, and if the Bulls stay at 36 and some of those other guys are off the board when the Bulls pick there, makes sense. Like, he's got the Illinois connection. The Bulls love that shit. And I've been super impressed by his game. So I would be willing to take a shot on him there. So he's somebody that I would continue to keep an eye on in the second round.
Another second rounder that I'm looking at, kind of for the same reasons that I'm interested in PJ Washington, and depending on how they play in the tourneys, and assuming their teams make some noise and go far, they might work themselves from fringe first to second rounders into maybe the teens or even lottery picks. But another guy right now who's not getting a whole lot of attention because of his teammate Hachimura is Zaga big Brandon Clark. I see a lot of potential at the NBA level for this dude. He's averaging 16-8 this season, 3.1 blocks per game, and shooting a staggering 69% from the field. Like I said, he's kind of second fiddle. Rui Hachimura is projected to go maybe even top five, certainly likely a guy that's going to go top 10. But I think with the potential that Zaga has to make a big run in the tourney this year, their first game tonight, 6:27, True TV, against Fairleigh Dickinson, should be a pretty dominant game for Zaga today. But Brandon Clark is another backcourt flyer option, much like Washington, that I'm going to be looking at for the Bulls as a potential second round pick.
I say to keep your eyes on everybody in the maybe top 15 of these prospects, because you never know what could happen between now and the draft. The Bulls could end up looking to trade down, like we were talking about. That's a possibility. So you could end up with multiple picks that are at the back end of the lottery. So just to keep your mind open to a lot of other prospects. But I like Rui Hachimura. The length, the size, the ability to shoot. I think the one thing with him is his ability to translate to the next level of the NBA, and can his scoring ability, can he play defense at the next level? Will he get bodied? Will the size translate the same way that some of these other threes and fours can translate, like the way RJ Barrett's size and skills can translate, the way that we were talking about DeAndre Hunter's defensive ability, can that translate? So he's a damn good player, though. But I see him kind of going between 9 and 13, same way with Brandon Clark. But another name, another teammate, Gonzaga's going to make a deep run, too. So between him and Brandon Clark, two guys to keep your eye on, same team as well. How about any of the point guards, Matt? Any point guards that you're going to be looking at besides Ja Morant? Obviously, Darius Garland's not going to be able to play. Vanderbilt's not in the tournament. Any point guards in the second round or late first round that you're going to be looking at?
Trey Jones, Duke, you know, obviously most of the attention is on Zion and to a lesser extent RJ and Reddish, but based on where he's projected right now, if the Bulls don't want to reach on a point guard, but it would instead be interested in adding one later in the draft with that second pick, certainly Trey Jones is a guy who might be around at that spot. And you know, for a draft where there aren't a whole lot of point guards, another one, and this is another game that's going on today, is the counterpoint to Ja Morant and Murray State, which everybody's really excited about. But that Marquette team, led by Marcus Howard, I think we touched on this a little bit yesterday, kind of banged up, but he is going to play today, 3:30 Central Time tip-off on TBS, Murray State Marquette. It's actually one of the upsets that I have in my bracket. I'm taking number 12 Murray State over Marquette. It's a pretty thin line for a 5 versus 12. And obviously, everybody's all in and is aware of what Ja Morant can do. But to his, you know, in his own right, Marcus Howard is a very good basketball player and a guy who could be a early second round kind of guy in the 19 draft.
Yeah, I think we touched on Marcus Howard real quick yesterday when we were talking about Ja Morant and Murray State playing Marquette's today, which if you're not going to tune into that game, then I don't know what you're doing, because that point guard versus point guard matchup is going to be a lot of fun to watch. So definitely tune into that game. Speaking of point guards, though, I touched on it quickly yesterday, but Carson Edwards is another one to keep your eye on for Purdue. He hasn't been all that great in the last, I would say, last 4 or 5 weeks for Purdue. He had a really tough stretch at the end of January going into the early February shooting from three. He was something like 4 for 50 from three at one point and was one of the leading causes of why Purdue was losing some of their games that they were. But I still think his game can translate to the NBA. And so he'd be a name that I would watch. I don't know. His volatility as far as being drafted in the second round is all over the place across draft boards. So even if he's a guy that goes undrafted, I would think he would be somebody that the Bulls should keep, definitely keep an eye on for undrafted, invite to summer league, try to get him on a roster if they don't look at him for a second round pick. Shamori Ponds played yesterday against St. John's. They ended up losing to Arizona State. Arizona State moved on, but again, he's another guy too to look at. The Athletic has him projected going to the Bulls at that 36th pick. I feel like we talked about potential and guys that could bring you to an all-star level, and there's not that many guys in this draft, but then you get into that talk of tier three, tier four players, and there's a ton of those dudes, and going all the way into the second round, there's a lot of those dudes available, so it'll be interesting to see what the Bulls will be able to do and be able to manage in that second round. So
yeah, and you just hope that the Bulls scouting team is on their game. Because we, as Bulls fans, were not pleased when they were holding their draft night press conference while the second round was still happening a couple of years ago, saying, why is it that you had no one on your draft board at 38? To me, it was always not about Jordan Bell, the player, so much the way that Bulls fans wanted to make it out to be. Look at this guy. Look at this kid who's like playing a role on the defending champion Warriors. And that's not what it was about to me. It wasn't about money. It was about the fact that they felt like they had no one that they wanted. No one that they were even curious to add as a rookie coming into a rebuilding team on their draft board. And as you said, Jordan, not a whole lot of front-end talent in this year's draft class, but a lot of very interesting characters and prospects in the maybe they go undrafted, maybe they're second-round prospects, and a lot of them are playing in this tournament that starts today. So whether it's attending actual games or making sure that everyone is watching the film of all of these games somewhere in the Bulls group of scouts and player personnel, when it comes time to have that second round pick, if they don't have many names on their board as the Chicago freaking Bulls, to me, like, that is an excuse we cannot hear again. I don't think it was acceptable to hear that excuse the first time around. You cannot hear that again. We cannot have that happen again. Do your job, as one Tom Thibodeau would say, to the people working Bulls scouting, do your job.
I can only agree with that. And with that, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up 331-979-1369. We'd love to hear from you. Anybody you're watching this weekend, you've got instant reaction from March Madness. Guys that you're watching in the tournament that you're excited about. You've got thoughts, reaction. Hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. On Instagram at Locked On Bulls. Go give us a follow there. On our text and voicemail line, we'd love to hear from you. So drop us a voicemail, a text message. Any reaction you have for us, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.